Excellent. Next, Dr. Alice Gorman from Flinders University.
Thank you. So I'm an archaeologist and I focus my research on objects and places in space. So from the surface of the Earth, launch sites, antennas, to space junk in Earth orbit, to planetary landing sites, particularly on the Moon and Venus, which is my other passion. I'm also a director on the board of the Space Industry Association. So if you want an example of how inclusive space can be, I'm an actual archaeologist involved in supporting the growth of space industry in Australia.
Fantastic. And she has the coolest handle, Dr. Space Junk.
At yes. Dr. Space Junk. Love it.
So I'm going to talk a bit about the cultural environment of the Moon and human cultural heritage on the Moon. So just as a very quick snapshot, what we have is now a lunar landscape, including the far side, which is littered with the artifacts of human engagement with the Moon. So you can see on that image, the yellow sites are the Apollo crewed landing sites, the green ones are the USSR lunar robotic landers, and the pale blue or grey are the US Surveyor landers. And you can see the numbers of some of them in the sites. So this is not everything that's on the Moon, it's just a little tiny sample, a large sample of human missions that have gone to the Moon. And we also have some satellites currently in orbit and satellites that have crashed on the surface. So this is quite a rich cultural landscape. And some people say, you know, this is terrible. We've gone to the Moon and left trash there. Well, kind of yes, but also kind of no. This is heritage. This is cultural heritage of the space age, which you can define basically as things from the past that are important to preserve for future generations based on how we feel about them, based on our emotional attachments. Okay? So I'm going to take just one quick example of a site that's very topical this year. It's the 50th anniversary of the landing of the Apollo 11 mission. And this is possibly the most interesting heritage and archaeological site on the Moon. So from a heritage perspective, this is how we might look at this place. We could say it has incredible historic heritage as that location where humans literally in their own bodies stepped into the soil of another world. It's the height of the Cold War, a very particular period, which as Jasmina mentioned, left a huge imprint on the way we engage with space and how we look at space. This site has aesthetic significance. By that, I don't mean whether it's beautiful or ugly. I just mean it has a very distinct feeling. It has light and shadows and colours that are not of this world. It's a place where we can study how humans interacted with this completely other world, with 1/6 Earth gravity. All of those footprints actually show how human bodies adapted and operated within that environment. And we can study them to find out stuff we didn't know about how we moved on the Moon. The social significance of this site is that people remember it. They remember where they were when they saw the Apollo 11 moon landing. 600 million people across the world, the largest television audience ever at that time. And people have strong beliefs about this place. Some of them are conspiracy theories, but they're still strong beliefs. Others see this site as an incredible symbol of human technology, human aspirations and endeavour. So this is a site with a lot of cultural significance. These places are far away. Nobody is out there at the moment destroying them, but this situation is likely to change. So as well as Apollo 11, we have all of those other places and more that we mentioned, which represent the history and heritage of our engagement with space. They're very exposed, no atmosphere on the Moon, stuff coming in all the time, some of which we've heard about already. So these materials are going to deteriorate over time, and we can't do much about that. What we can do something about is future human activities which are going to adversely impact on the ability of these places to survive. So many people are planning to go back to the Moon. Where they choose to site their bases or their industrial installations or their mining operations could have a huge impact on the ability of something like the Apollo 11 site to actually physically survive for those future generations. So where things are located is going to be critical. Once more people are on the moon or more robots are on the moon, then the density of visitation to sites like Apollo 11 is going to have an impact on the condition of those materials. And we know what happens on Earth with heritage sites. People go to them, they loot artifacts from them to sell on the antiquities market, and I'm sure most of you know there is an incredibly vigorous collecting and trade market for things that have been in space. And people want to do this. They want to steal stuff from these sites and sell it for profit. We know vandalism is likely to occur. We know that people will, with the best of intentions, just want to go and take a little piece of one of these sites. So that's all stuff maybe we can do something about. But the primary threat is actually when more vehicles are landing on the moon, they're going to stir up the dust. This dust is sticky, it's abrasive, and it's very damaging, not just to heritage sites, but to the operations of any kind of human installation or building. We know this dust is a problem because it was flagged as something before the first Apollo missions went, and they studied the dust intensely. But in 1969, quite an extraordinary event happened. Some people call it the first archaeology on the moon. So Apollo 12 landed just 180 metres away from Surveyor 3, which had landed on the moon in 1967. So in that picture, you can see Apollo 12 right in the background, and that's Alan Bean, who went to Surveyor 3, and he removed a camera and a couple of other pieces, and he took them back to Earth. When they were analysed, it was found that the surfaces facing the Apollo 12 landing site had been heavily abraded and pitted. This is the impact that stirring up lunar dust can have. We know even more about the impacts of dust because an Australian space scientist, Professor Brian O'Brien, designed the first dust detector experiment for the moon. It was sent to the moon on Apollo 11, and he's been gathering and analysing data about this for quite some time now. So, we have a problem on the moon. It is the impacts of dust on human materials. If we are going to have bases of any kind or industrial or mining operations of any kind, people are going to have to figure out how to prevent the impacts of dust from preventing these things from happening. We know that stirring up dust is going to have a negative impact on these incredible lunar heritage sites. So there are two problems here, and they have the same solution. And there's a lot of scientists working on how to stop dust getting in the way of future human activities. Some of the things they've proposed are, obviously, if you putting your new lunar enterprises in places which are not going to impact anyone else's stuff, using natural terrain barriers like crater rims and mountains to prevent the movement of dust, building blast walls and berms, kind of earth or lunar embankments to limit the movement of dust, stabilising the surface and sintering processes, not using surface transportation to get from place to place or to move materials around, but actually using cable mast systems. In 2011, NASA put together a set of guidelines for managing the impacts to the heritage sites on the moon for US ones, but they apply to everything. One of their main recommendations was that buffer zones should be created, and they've outlined these for all of the US sites on the moon. So if you are going to be operating near one of these places, you can only approach within certain limits. If you are overflying, you have to use particular angles of approach so that you don't stir up all of that dust. So no one's saying we shouldn't use the scientific data that we can get from visiting these sites, but we do need to have some kind of control over who goes there, how frequently, what methods they use. Otherwise, these places are simply not going to survive, and people 100 years from now won't be able to look at the data. They won't know what Apollo 11 materials looked like in another 100 years, which is extremely valuable information for us. So that's the good news. We can protect the heritage and further our interests in working on the moon by learning how to mitigate impacts from dust. So finally, I want to look at the whole of the moon. So this, as the moon is a cultural object, that there is no human who has ever been born on the earth who has not experienced the effects of the moon in some way or other, whether it's light or tides or cultural knowledge or stories. Every person on earth is a stakeholder in the cultural heritage of the moon. And we ought to remember this, and we ought to be thinking about this. What is the kind of moon we want to pass on to future generations as our human heritage? And I will leave you with that thought.
Thank you very much. Now I hear the mic is over here somewhere. Excellent. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. I just have a question for Alice about archaeology. Just as with the Nazca lines in Peru, to use an example, the public can't traipse all over them, but researchers can investigate them. Do you foresee that, say, they put in buffer and exclusion zones on the moon, that the public won't be able to traipse through there, but researchers will get special permission to go and visit these sites?
Yeah, I think the sort of logical way to go about this would be to have some kind of permitting system. So if you're a researcher, you would have to lay out your reasons for wanting to go there. Are you going to take samples? What information will we get from them? How are you going to share that information? What benefits will there be? And the public thing is a different one, because these are, if we're going to make an argument that this is sort of world heritage or outstanding universal value, then the public has a right to engage with these spaces, but then we're looking at them being completely destroyed in the process. So I think a good example is the site of Lascaux, which is a 15,000-year-old rock art site in southern France, northern Spain, which basically, when it was discovered in the 70s, had a high rate of visitation, such that the artwork began to... This is, people probably know these images. It's like sort of mammoths and bisons and hares, all this beautiful Ice Age rock art. So they began to deteriorate. So they've created a 3D replica, which you can go and see. So scientists can still go in there, but the public goes to see the 3D replica. And this is a question of authenticity, because the reason space-flown objects have high market value is the guarantee that they have been in space. So people value that somehow. But if they don't know that what they're seeing is not the real thing, they don't care, studies have shown. So Lascaux is very successful. I think something like that for the lunar heritage sites might be possible as well. So people can still have an experience and engage with it in a way that's going to have low impact on their survival. Because I see a point, you know, 500 years from now, somebody saying it would be so fantastic if we could go and get this data from the Apollo 11 site. So, well, that's too bad. Like 10 years after humans went back to the moon, that stuff was gone. So I think we're kind of looking at planning ahead for the future in that way, but not so that it excludes legitimate study that can actually assist us in future off-Earth enterprises, I guess. Yeah.
You can imagine this aquarium. As you go, you can't touch the fish, but you can see it. So we can make, like, space museum.
There might be telepresence as well. So NASA is working on lunar drones. So, you know, it might be possible you go to the moon, you VR yourself up into a little thing, and you use that to zip around these places with low impact. So lots of possibilities, I think.
I also have a question about archaeological heritage. It takes an awful lot of money to move a kilogram of matter from the Earth to the moon. And it may be that some of these heritage sites have materials that could be used in the development of space structures elsewhere. So there is a competition between what might be practical salvage and archaeological heritage. Would you comment on that?
My comment on that would be, I suspect a lot of those materials are going to be in extremely poor condition because they have been exposed to all of those environmental factors. I think that is a possibility, though, because it does cost a lot to get things up there. The same applies for space junk in Earth orbit. You wear that cost to get it up there. It would not make sense not to use that as a resource. But I would say that if... I would see something like that happening in, like, an extreme disaster situation, let's say. So some astronauts are in a situation where they are, I don't know, in danger or separated or unable to get back to the base or whatever, they need to use what resources are around them to survive. So I think people would see cannibalising these sites in that circumstance as kind of okay. But if your lunar mission depends on you using those materials, you haven't planned it very well, I would say.
Is that? It's all still about putting humans as some kind of pinnacle of everything, and then relating everything back to, or the humans touched that 50 years ago, therefore that has special, is more special now. And I'm not, like, saying bah humbug to that. I'm just saying it's this incredibly
I think this is not just a question of humans have done this. It's more about that material has been sitting there. It has been exposed to solar radiation, exposed to different things. So we can actually study how material that we build rover reacts to space, the solar radiation. So it's actually informing us to how we build. I mean, similar way we study Egyptian pyramids to figure out how they, you know, the secrets of architecture. Some of these things actually then inform future. So they improve material that you want to build. Because if you in a lab bombard something and then it actually goes in space, it's different because we can never create vacuum on Earth. So we can build the closest possible environment, but it will never be like space. So Moon is actually a giant lab for us. But it's also about materials. So if we think, on Earth, this material has sustained so much radiation pressure, and then on the Moon we find out, oh no, this is way off, because we still had, you know, earthly gravity and earthly pressure, and sometimes you don't realize how many of these things are. So I don't think people treat this so much about, oh, it's humans have been there and therefore it's precious. I think it's, as a researchers, people will go into seeing, okay, what have happened to this 20 years after? What have happened to this 30 years after? More in that kind of, sort of more technological understanding. But then, of course, there's a cultural idea of you wanting to preserve
something. I think Cara's rightly identified that heritage centres humans. And there's been some interesting work done on robotic heritage. I mean, in the sense of, can a robot develop? Or, you know, we're going to have more and more AI kinds of robots out there. So how do we take their interests into account when we look at this stuff as well? And I think there's a lot of... well, increasingly philosophies are saying we need to decenter humans from this whole enterprise. And I have a lot of sympathy, I guess, with the what they call the cosmic preservation... It's not exactly a movement, cosmic preservation philosophy, I guess. But from my perspective as a heritage person, I think it's that social significance which is important. If people feel strongly about things, the scientific stuff, not the scientific rationales, but the scientific potentials are maybe less important. It is, and sure, you're right, that is totally centering how humans feel about this, and there are other perspectives you can take as well, but I guess I'm coming from that perspective as a heritage person. And I also think that this is one of the things that can connect people to the Moon and draw them into a dialogue where decisions are not going to be made by engineers and politicians and private corporations, because those connections we make with these places are our legitimacy to say that we have a say in this, we have a stake in this as stakeholders, and it is not for massive private corporations to remove that in the direction that we're seeing currently. So I suppose I can see an intersection there, but I absolutely take your point. It's inevitably we are centering humans in a way that is what's happening now, but maybe in a longer term is not a useful way to approach the solar system as a whole.
Or in fact, the environment of our current planet, of course.